It's a Bopmatic podcast for May 25th, 2016. This past Saturday marked the traditional time of the month when the crazies come out, when communication between couples breaks down, and when emergency rooms around the world see a spike in silver bullet injuries. That's right. We're like Tom Petty circa 1989. We've got full moon fever. Coming to you from the Tranquility Base at Studio MPL in downtown Nashville, this is the Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. It's the most important card in your wallet. Take that, Sam Jackson! I'm reading this just like Brian. I'm doing it just like Brian, but in my voice. Sam Jackson would be proud. I'm tired of all these library cards in this wallet. beep. I'm Jeremy, and pining with me today are...
Your Huckleberry friend, Bill.
Amanda. Clem Marie.
Yeah. All right. Today we're waxing about all things moon. And we've got the best books, movies, and music that won't make your attention wane.
You worked hard on that one.
Party on Garth.
Party on Wayne.
Clem Marie.
Hello.
Are you ready to step out of the pod?
Yes, I am, and I am ready to cast. Well, today I am talking about, since we're talking about the full moon, today I am talking about my favorite moon-related snack. Yeah. That's right, we're talking about Tennessee's own moon pie.
Yay, moon
pie. I love moon pies. Come on, it's marshmallow between two cookies covered in a flavored coating. My favorite is the banana, however... However, I will not say no to chocolate. However, because of nostalgia's sake, I will go for banana. And as a matter of fact, on the subject of nostalgia, my pick for today is I read a book called Moon Pie, Biography of an Out-of-This-World Snack by David McGee.
It's so awesome. There's actually a book about moon pie.
Yes, and it actually, because one of the things that the book traces is sort of the cultural impact of the moon pie, that this little snack made by Chattanooga Bakery, one bakery that they only make this one product.
Really?
They make this one product. Chattanooga Bakery, who makes the moon pies, only makes moon pies.
Wow.
But in the book, David McGee traces the history that... the Chattanooga Bakery started like a lot of other regional bakeries in the late 19th century, that they made a lot of different products. But as the decades, it actually started off as a subsidiary of another bakery to do something with the leftover flour from a flour mill. So they had all this leftover flour. After milling it, what do we do with all this flour? We're going to start baking with it. So they started, you know, the whole stable of products. But as the years went by, the genesis of the moon pie was that it was developed in response to the needs of miners in the Appalachian region. Because miners, so the bakery salesman would go out, you know, little lemon cookies weren't cutting it for these miners who were down in the mines working hard, you know, mining for coal. So they wanted something, a more substantial snack. So one of the salesmen decided, okay, so we're going to do something with marshmallow, put the cookies together and the flavor coating. And you know, moon pie, it's pretty big, substantial.
Pretty big,
even the single decker. We'll get to the double decker in a second. But so the moon pie at 5 cents during the Depression was a very sort of economical and yet filling snack. So it started becoming very
snack or lunch. I heard it was lunch.
Well, yes, actually, it became part of what was later called the working man's lunch, because a 5 cent moon pie and a 5 cent RC Cola, 10 cents, it could actually quite fill you up.
Wow.
You know,
it's give you a nice sugar buzz.
It's a nice sugar, a lot of buzz for a couple of hours. Yes, I've had one on a drive to Florida and it will give you a buzz. So I've had that same snack, that same lunch on drive to Florida. So it will give you a buzz.
Excellent.
So the book traces the trajectory of the moon pie from its development as a single decker sandwich to later on in the 50s and 60s, with the advent of vending machines, the single decker moon pie would fall out. It wouldn't fit in the vending machines. So the double decker moon pie that I love, because come on, more, would fit in the vending machine. This book traces the whole history. It's a very interesting sort of cultural history. It also talks about the sort of cultural impact that the moon pie has had, that it's, you know, been, you know, featured in songs, and there's a children's book featuring a moon pie. And so, and, you know, the people talk about that, that the moon pie still remains popular because of the nostalgia attached to it, that people have these memories. And the book is interspersed with people's little anecdotes about, you know, going down to the corner store with grandpa and being able to get one thing, and the thing was the moon pie. Yeah. And it's sort of, and it's sort of how it's popular because it still continues to touch upon that deep nostalgia piece. I know for me, I remember moon pies when I was a child. I'm still a fan of banana moon pies. Nowadays, the Chattanooga Bakery is still a family-owned company. And they continue to have, apparently they make most of their treats, make all their treats, and now they have more flavors, salted caramel, strawberry, and so on, you know, in addition to the vanilla, chocolate, and banana. But okay. They still only use one line to make the moon pie. So wow. They have to alternate. So it's a big, it's a little bakery that can and did, that yeah. could and did. And also traces the, it also talks about the advent of the mini moon pie, which you may have seen in stores. It comes in a box of 12.
I've tasted them. They're just as good.
They're just as good. And you can eat more of them.
You can, yes.
So, you know, perfect for the lunchbox. And I really enjoyed this book. As I was reading, I really wanted to eat moon pies. I wonder why I had no moon pies in my house. It's a quick and easy read. But it's also, you know, it'll make you think back on your childhood. Oh, moon pies were a big part of it, particularly in the South.
Yeah.
And also, it's a very interesting history of one company, how one company has remained small yet true to its product. This is what we do, and we're going to do it well. Chattanooga Bakery, the Moon Pie. Also, there is a Moon Pie Festival in Bell Buckle, Tennessee, which I would like to go and eat moon pies. Just stuff my face full of them.
Yeah.
And RC Colas.
Do you know, maybe it doesn't say in the book, do you know if they do tours of the bakery?
No, they do not tours of the bakery. Oh. Apparently, the author did get a tour of the bakery, but it was a very special one-time thing.
You have to write a book to get the tour.
Yeah. Yes. The bakery is not open to the public. It's a small bakery. However, sure. That would be neat. But apparently, next to the bakery, there are Moon Pie's general stores where you can buy all sorts of Moon Pie-related paranalia and the snack itself.
My father-in-law has a moon pie shirt.
Oh, yes. Oh, that's great. Yes, and so I read this book. If you're interested in the genesis of an American snack food, in some interesting cultural and economic history, and also a piece of nostalgia, read Moon Pie, Biography of an Out-of-This-World Snack.
You can also go to the website, and they have recipes of things you can make.
Yes.
With, like, you can make, like, strawberry shortcake with the strawberry moon pies. And
yes. Like, get two moon pies and, like, make a banana split.
Yeah.
And so, like, chocolate and a banana moon pie. You split them and put them together, ice cream.
I've never tried it, but I know it happens.
There's all sorts of recipes you can make with
moon pie. I've always been a Little Debbie
partisan. That's what I grew up with because I wasn't from Tennessee, so I wasn't
but,
cool.
But like I like moon pies, of course, but Little Debbie, like, I always... She's my gal.
Yeah, I grew up with Little Debbie too, but moon pie, I think for me, because it wasn't something down in Florida where you couldn't get all that often. Florida being a weird part of the South.
Yeah.
That you can get some things, but you can't get all of them.
Yeah. I feel like maybe the what were you calling it? Flavored coating? Or
yes, the flavored coating.
I feel like that might be, and the humidity too would be a little.
Yes, but one thing about moon pies is they have a long shelf life.
Oh, yeah?
They have
like
about
Twinkies.
Yes. And also.
The wrapper too. You can hold on to the wrapper and eat it.
Yes. And also, apparently, the snack is engineered so that when the moisture from the marshmallow seeps into the cookie, it makes it softer and it keeps it fresher longer.
That's fantastic. Amanda.
Yes, Jeremy.
What would you recommend for moon
full moon
week? Full moon week.
Moon madness. So when you first start taking piano lessons, at least when I did, you learn great pieces like Beethoven's Joyful or Mozart's Eine kleine Nachtmusik. And then you learn that what you can play are just uber simplified arrangements done by a handful of dudes like John W. Schamm or James Bastian, who like to develop piano methods for kids and beginners. So admittedly, it's a little deflating to find out that you don't know this great piece that you thought you knew, but you still can impress all your friends because they don't know either. So I started playing piano when I was 5, and it wasn't until I got to middle school that I actually got to start playing, finger quotes, real pieces from composers instead of just lessons from method books. One of the first selections that I remember learning was the first movement of Ludwig van Beethoven's Piano Sonata No. 14 in C-sharp minor, Quasi una Fantasia, Opus 27, No. 2.
That's a what a snappy name.
Thanks. I had to practice that.
That beats Hotline Bling.
Yeah.
I know when that Hotline Bling, you can only hear one thing, Goofy dancing.
So after a comment by German music critic and poet Ludwig Reilstab, in which he compared the effect of the music to that of moonlight shining upon Lake Lucerne, the name Moonlight Sonata was firmly established in the canon. And this is something probably a lot of people know. Let's take a listen to the first movement.
You know the song Past, Present, Future by the Shangri-Las?
No.
You should listen to it because it sounds very similar.
Does it borrow? So it's pretty familiar to most of us. The piece is deceptively hard, though. It sounds easy, but it's the first piece that I learned where different parts of your hand had to do different things. So the eighth note triplets need to remain steady, but then the top note comes in, which is played by the weakest finger on your hand, and that needs to be brought out because, thanks Beethoven, that's the melody. It was challenging and I enjoyed learning. He was deaf. He didn't know what he was doing.
Beethoven burned.
Actually, this was early. He wasn't deaf when he wrote this one, but
it made him deaf.
Yeah, maybe. So it was challenging. I enjoy learning it. I still enjoy playing it every now and again. I kind of break out the oldies but goodies. As I got older, I thought, you know, hey, I should learn the other two movements. So I'll have this whole complete sonata in my repertoire because that's what you do when you're a piano player. The second movement wasn't too bad. It's kind of forgettable. Nobody really talks about it or plays it unless you do the whole piece, but it doesn't stand out. So I didn't really focus a lot on that too hard. I could probably play through it if I worked on it. The third movement, however, was much more exciting, and let's take a listen to that.
Don't you think he was just showing off?
Yeah, as a composer would.
Yeah. I mean, like, come on,
man. He's like, I got this. So, yeah, I can't really play that. now, the two notes where it goes, bump, bump, I can do that. I practiced that. It's all arpeggios, it's all patterns, and it's all doable, but it just goes really fast. It's actually, the official tempo marking is presto agitato, which means really fast and agitated. So pretty much as fast as you can play it. And yes. Angrily and get mad and break something. So if you ever hear someone perform this, be impressed because it's really hard. And if they do it well, they've put some time in it. Also, I don't think that movement sounds like the moonlight.
That's like the moon. Darkest, stormy night. Yeah, the moon is crashing into the earth, and we're all dying in a fireball.
So that's the Moonlight Sonata. Parts of it do remind me of the moon, but parts of it will keep you up under it practicing. It has lasted for over 200 years, so Beethoven must have done something right.
I wonder if there's like a guitar version of that.
I'm sure there's probably 95 versions
like a
of it.
Thrash metal?
Yeah, like Yngwie Malmsteen, like just doing this tapping. And
maybe the fast part is supposed to remind you of Moon Madness.
I guess. I want to be the bass player if they do that because then he would just have the bump, bump.
Bump, bump. Ooh, I'd like to hear it on a bass. That's like the ultimate nerdy sort of like some guy playing like a 6-string bass.
Yeah,
jam bands.
Go Beethoven.
Bill. What's mooning you?
Okay. Hopefully not you.
Hopefully that's my next line.
What's pressing your hand?
That was my next bit.
Well, on mine, a brief historical perspective. In 1958, Breakfast at Tiffany's by Truman Capote was published. It tells the story of Holly Golightly, a country girl turned into a New York society girl. This novella is in our library collection. The novella begat a motion picture called Breakfast at Tiffany's, starring Audrey Hepburn and directed by Blake Edwards. This movie, too, is in our collection. Now, in that movie is one of the greatest standards ever recorded, Moon River.
off to see the world. There's such a lot of world to see. We're after the same rainbow's end, waiting round the bend.
The music was by Henry Mancini and the lyrics by Johnny Mercer. In doing research, I read Henry Mancini's career was about to hit a golden era. Not only did he score Breakfast at Tiffany's, but the movies Charade, Arabesque, Two for the Road, and let's not forget the Pink Panther thing.
Say Pink Panther,
You've made it when everybody can hum your music.
Okay.
The writer of the lyrics, Johnny Mercer, had fallen out of favor because of rock and roll. And Mercer wrote jazz standards, like Accentuate the Positive was his, and that didn't exactly fit in with Rock Around the Clock.
Yeah.
I also found out when Audrey Hepburn sings Moon River in the movie Breakfast at Tiffany's, a studio executive wanted it cut out of the movie, to which Audrey Hepburn said, "Over my dead body." Audrey Hepburn was at the height of her power at the box office draw, and so she sort of got her way. We have the soundtrack to Breakfast at Tiffany's in our collection. If you go to Hoopla, you can get Andy Williams, Frank Sinatra, and even Johnny Mercer doing their own renditions of Moon River. Oh, by the way, there was a rebirth of Johnny Mercer. He went on to write songs Charade and The Day of Wine and Roses, and he was no longer out of date. Jeremy?
All right. There's a bit on The Simpsons where the bully Nelson Muntz goes to see Andy Williams in concert. He gets excited because he does Moon River.
Did he go to Branson?
Yeah, I think he goes.
The Branson is the Moon River Theater.
Yeah. Oh, wow. And now I gotta hunt down that.
We have Andy Williams' biography too, Moon River. It's called. Wow. So it's like this song, literally. Yeah. You know, it's made him.
Yeah, it's. I got nothing.
Got no puns.
No,
he's out.
Sorry,
he's
used but wasn't it fascinating?
It was absolutely fascinating.
Yes. I like that song. I like Henry Mancini too. So.
Yeah. I like to imagine Audrey Hepburn, threatening someone over my dead body. That little tiny woman over my dead, you know.
She had power bangs. It was okay.
Power getting bangs. Goldie with someone like no, over my dead body.
Speaking of power bangs and dead bodies, I'm going to talk about a superhero. Shocked face, Amanda.
Yes, I didn't have to say it. You said it for me.
I'm anticipating your every move. Superheroes get their powers from a lot of different places. Earth's yellow sun, radioactive spiders, genetic mutations, cosmic rays, or accidents involving chemicals. Mercenary Mark Spector got his powers after almost dying on a mission in Egypt and promising a vision of the god Khonshu
Gesundheit
to be his avatar on Earth. Khonshu
Gesundheit.
You can put in Gesundheit after I say that if you want.
Okay.
As you might have guessed, Khonshu, as you might have
Gesundheit
guessed, is the ancient Egyptian lunar god, and Moon Knight is his agent on Earth. Moon Knight first appeared in Marvel Comics' Werewolf by Night number 32 in August 1975, and has always occupied the second or third tier of Marvel heroes despite being totally awesome. Moon Knight has been described as Marvel's answer to Batman because of his moon, all these moon-specific weapons and vehicles that he has, because his obsession with the moon rivals Batman's with bats. But rather than just being a mercenary moonlighting as a vigilante, Mark Spector is also pretends to be taxicab driver Jake Lockley and millionaire Stephen Grant. He uses these identities as a means of infiltrating different aspects of the underworld, but then things get kooky when he develops multiple personality disorder and is unsure of who's who and who he is. Marvel Comics in the 1980s, when Moon Knight was sort of at its heyday, have a really great balance of seriousness, ridiculousness, and soap opera. That is when they weren't trying to sell toys like G.I. Joe and Transformers. And writer Doug Mensch does a great job with this material. And also the artist for most of these stories is Bill Sienkiewicz, who is not the super stylized penciler that you all know and love.
I love him.
Yeah.
Brian, who's not here, loves him. but you sort of, so you see him early in his career when he's sort of getting, when he's normal, and then like he starts getting really stylized and really awesome. Moon Knight doesn't have a lot of name recognition outside the realm of comic book fans, but you can read a good chunk of his adventures in the collection Shadows of the Moon by Doug Mensch, Bill Sienkiewicz, and many others. It collects issues number 5 through 23 of the early 1980s incarnation of Moon Knight. That series ended in 1984, leaving the character relegated to backup stories and a miniseries and guest roles until 1989, when another series was launched. But that one ended in 1994, and then he kind of bounced around for years with some revivals here and there, but nothing too successful. In 2014, the series was relaunched again with writer Warren Ellis and artist Declan Shalvey. And we have the collection From the Dead, and it collects Warren Ellis's 6-issue run on the series. Depicts Moon Knight as both a traditionally clad superhero with a cape and hood and as a Tom Wolfe dressed vigilante. He looks really cool in a white suit.
I say white suit.
And seersucker.
It's pretty rad.
Yeah. And seersucker.
There's also an issue which features Moon Knight facing off against a psychedelic fungus, so I'm all in. The second and third volumes of the series feature different creative teams, but they're definitely worth checking out. So it may be a blue moon before you see Moon Knight in a Marvel TV show or movie. But
you never know. They might be strapped for material.
Yeah, that's true. TGI Comics, though, because they're better than TV shows. Hey, gals.
Hey, Jeremy.
What do we do on Tickle My Fancy?
Well,
maybe the library has it.
Maybe the library doesn't.
But either way, it's tickling our fancy.
Amanda?
I get to go first?
Yeah, yes.
Super tickle? Okay, so somehow over the course of a few years, my Netflix account has gotten the idea that I like to watch home improvement type shows. So now it routinely offers me different shows on this same idea. So recently, one show that popped up was called Mega Mansions. Since I do not now, nor have I ever lived in a regular mansion, much less a mega mansion, I thought that I would check it out.
We're going coast to coast and getting an all-access pass to homes so big they can only be called Mega Mansions. First up, Hearst Castle. It's a one-of-a-kind man cave built by one of America's richest men. This place is packed with millions of dollars of artifacts.
48 pounds of solid silver, $1 million.
And for the first time on camera, a trip to the secret vaults where they keep the really rare stuff away from the tourists. Then, a $45 million party palace of the future.
This is one of the biggest and most expensive projects we've ever worked on.
It all starts now on Mega Mansions.
So the series was created and aired on the Travel Channel in 2012, but they're still running the episodes today on Monday mornings. Unfortunately, they only have 6 episodes.
Oh, no.
So they go through the run pretty quickly. So with 2 Mega Mansions per show, we only get to see 12 total, which is maybe the sum total of Mega Mansions in the United States. They probably had trouble finding a lot more, especially with people that would actually let them in with cameras to see their precious abodes. So some houses like the Biltmore in North Carolina or Hearst Castle in California are open to the public, but others are still private residencies. Some of these were really classy, but a couple were pretty tacky Playboy Mansion wannabes. And I actually think that one of the homeowners had helped, finger quotes, produce a porno. And he showed the poster of his movie in his man cave during the shoot. And he's like, this is my foray into movies.
Can you tell us what the title was?
I don't remember what it was. I should go back and it was like some space something. It was kind of like, yeah.
Cool,
like,
in space.
Yes. Yeah, so
like on the moon?
Like on the moon. Maybe, yeah. So
adult entertainment on the moon.
Hey, it funded his mansion. So.
You know what? I think if any industry will get us to the moon, it's probably the porn industry.
That's probably fair. So my favorite anecdote from the series, though, has to do with books. So most of the libraries, they would say the favorite room of Mr. Vanderbilt was his library, and it has 30,000 volumes and blah, 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 and on and on.
Nobody reads it nowadays.
Well, so apparently the MGM Hotel in Las Vegas has this super secret mega mansion on their site that they let high rollers book, or they comp to folks who put like $500,000 or more on the table. rules because, you know, you can. So out of the 12 mansions that we saw, this fabulous Las Vegas retreat was the only mansion that did not have a library, which totally makes sense because people in Las Vegas don't, you know, finger quotes, read.
Yeah.
Because it interferes with gambling and watching the dancing girls.
Yeah, you're making that much money, you don't have time to read.
Yeah. They should read books about gambling, then maybe they wouldn't do it so much. But anyway, so I just thought that was an appropriate commentary on the Mega Mansion life. I wish there were more episodes, but maybe, you know, some else will hit the jackpot and build a big mansion and have it on TV shows.
Yeah. Have you watched, I haven't seen that movie, The Queen of Versailles.
No, I haven't seen
that. It's some guy and his wife, they're building some crazy mansion.
And then, in Florida, of course.
Yeah, Florida, yeah. And they go broke like halfway through it. And so it's like, it's like half finished and
Are they making it look like Versailles, or was that just a clever name?
I don't know,
but I think the library has a documentary.
I believe the library has it. Might be on Netflix too. I'm not sure.
Yes.
But
I'm surprised my Netflix hasn't told me to watch it yet.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't mention if I don't know that.
Maybe I don't know because it's apparently a mansion in need of improvement, so it would go.
Yeah, maybe it's not mega yet. Maybe it's not mega yet. Pseudo mansion.
It's just like super.
Yeah. Apparently, you know, it's, you know, like half open or something like that.
I want to say it was like wires hanging out.
One of them had a swimming pool, the shape of a cross that was so big you could see it from space.
Wow. In the shape of a cross.
Yeah. And he was actually selling it because he had two mansions and he didn't think he needed two.
So he was selling this.
Yeah, that ain't in the Bible.
God said, let there be pool.
let there be chlorine.
As someone with a theological studies background, I know.
Yeah. It's like, I missed that chapter in the book.
I know.
I'm turning water into margaritas. What is tickling your fancy, Glenn Marie?
Tickling my fancy this week and tickling my fancy for a couple of months now is the gym I go to, which is rather apropos on this episode after I talk about moon pies. So
It balances.
Yeah, I still want a moon pie. Yeah. But however, I've been going since the end of late last year and really since the beginning of this year to Move Fit Personal Training. It's out on Charlotte Pike down in West Nashville, my neighborhood. And it's a really great gym. It's a small gym. It's actually a personal training studio. So what they do is they offer personal training, one-on-one training, small group training with like two or three people, and they also offer group fitness classes. And the classes are tough. It's, however, a really supportive environment. At the beginning of this year, I signed up to do this. We did this 90-day challenge in which we were put into teams. And we all got, as part of the $99 or the $89 challenge package, we got like this, what they call a MyZone belt, which is a heart rate monitor.
Oh.
And we had to, our workouts were translated into points, you know, like effort points. Mm-hmm. And the team that got the most points, teams had to get a certain number of points each month in order to advance in the challenge. And that really got me motivated because there were other people counting on me to do work and things like that. And also for my own personal health, because I was not fitting into my clothes. And also because I also had some worrying numbers come back from the doctor. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to get better. And since then, it's a really supportive environment. It is small. You would think, oh, personal training studio. It's actually not like that. It's very down to earth. It's not cheap. However, I budgeted for it because it is an investment in my body. Yep. Since the beginning of the year, I've lost about 20 pounds with a lot of hard work.
That's incredible.
So I was there this morning at the 5:45 a.m. class. Working it out. And according to my heart rate monitor, I burned over 500 calories.
That's like two bites of moon pie.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. So I could probably have a moon pie.
Mm-hmm.
But so they have great group fitness classes. Your first class is free. So you can sign up online and your first class is free. Call MoveFit Personal Training or visit the website. The owner, Daniel Meng, is a very nice man. And all the trainers are really supportive, very knowledgeable. They will offer modifications and corrections in case, like, you know, my body can't do this exercise. Okay, well, let's try this one. And it's a modification. So MoveFit Personal Training, it is tickling my fancy at 5:45 a.m. in the morning.
Ooh, jeez.
That's dedication right
there.
That
really is.
See, but the thing is, by 6:30, I am done. Like, look at me.
Yeah, if I did that, I would throw up. Like, I'm not a good morning exerciser.
No, this is why I don't eat beforehand, because first time I had coffee and I'm like, I could throw up this coffee right now.
I'm not a good morning person. I'm better in the evening.
It's hard for me to get up in the morning to exercise, but the times that I've done it, I really have liked it because it kind of energizes you for the day and stuff.
You get it done, you're like, I'm done.
It's out of the way. Yeah, that is very nice. nice.
See, I'm not really a morning person either, but for this, I'm like, okay, because of my work schedule, sometimes at the library doing outreach, I have to work in the evening.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes I'm home by 5. I'm like, I don't want to do anything. Bob's Burgers, Netflix. So this time, so instead, you know, like I get it done and it's, oh, okay, great. Because I realized as I started, when I started going to the gym, oh, crap, it's 5:45 a.m. or nothing. You have to do this.
Yeah.
Well, 5:45 a.m. it is. Guess what? I do it.
I was doing it for a while. I would get up at like 6 or something and just go for a walk in my neighborhood, like 30 minutes or something. It was really refreshing. And I want to do it, but it's like I'll commit to doing it and then it'll start raining and then I'll just forget for 2 months and like, I'm not going to do it.
Oh, I haven't walked in a while.
Yeah. I go to the Y and I walk, you know, to work and stuff. Cause I've all my numbers going to the doctor and stuff, everything's been fine, but I've always been on the plumper side of plump, in my whole life. So and as I get older, that is easier to get out of hand. So especially because sometimes I just eat ice cream for dinner.
Ice cream.
Yeah, it's the best. It's the best.
So yes, but they will encourage and challenge you, tickling my fancy.
That's excellent. I will stay on my theme of funny books this week since I really don't think I talked about comic books much lately. And I still like them.
Has it changed?
But I've been saddened. This past weekend, or recently, comic artist and writer Darwin Cook passed away of cancer. It was very abrupt for the public. It was sort of announced one day, and then the next day he was gone. He is a really great writer and artist. He is maybe best known for this Kennedy era, this DC Justice League book that was set during the 1960s called New Frontier that was adapted into a film, a cartoon. It was really good. He also did some really great Catwoman stories. He redesigned her costume to make her less bosomy in the early 2000s, which was undone by subsequent artists.
Boys.
Yeah. Tell me about it. He also did some really fantastic adaptations of Donald Westlake's Parker books. He was the first adapter of those works to actually be able to use the name Parker as the first person that Westlake.
Is that the one that they did the movie of with, is it Jason Statham that was Parker? Or is
That was the first movie that they ever made with that character.
He did the comic books.
He did the comic books, okay. But it was before that movie. Yeah. But,
they're probably better.
And they're really amazing. His work, I don't even know how you describe it. There's like a really cartoony look to it. And there is something sort of, that's like a throwback to like a 60s sort of style, but very sleek, very stylish, very cool. We have a new book that he illustrated that I'm looking forward to reading called The Twilight Children that was written by Gilbert Hernandez of Love and Rockets fame that is currently in the catalog but is not yet circulating. So rest in peace, Darwin Cook. Thank you for all the great work. Corrections! Does anyone have any corrections?
Why, no, Jeremy.
Okay. Nope.
Brian, who is not here today, has some corrections that he sent me over the email. The film That Guy Dick Miller that Bill talked about is available on Hoopla, and I watched it on Amazon. It was great. I really enjoyed it. Jimmy Fallon and Justin Timberlake's History of Rap is all over YouTube, but not legally.
I thought it was on Vimeo.
Well, only Volume 6 is on official Tonight Show YouTube, is on the official Tonight Show YouTube count.
Well, the other ones were before he was on the Tonight Show.
Okay, I see.
So I thought Vimeo was legit.
Oh, that makes sense.
Legit,
yeah.
Because they were when it was late night.
I think that's fine. Who cares? They got money. the library does not have a copy of Mystery Girl by Roy Orbison, which features the song The Comedians, which was a joke in the episode. And the Star Trek The Next Generation storyline that Brian referred to was actually spread over 2 episodes, Booby Trap from Season 3, Episode 6, and Galaxy's Child, Season 4, Episode 16.
So for more information about nerd shows, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
And our theme music is by
Adam Dean.
Next week, we're talking about summertime.